Swami Vaichandra Vinayak Viranji Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Sri Iskon Chaitanya Chandra Daya Mandir Ki Sri Sri Rala Marva Asta Sakhi Ki Sri Sri Panchatattva Bhagavan Ki Sri Sri Prahlad Narasimha Dev Ki Sri Sat Goswami Prabhu Ki Sri Guru Parampara Ki Srimad Bhagavata Mahapurana Ki Samavita Bhakta Vrinda Ki Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Glories to Srila Prabhupada, Mam Vishnu Praya, Krishna Prashtaya, Bhutale, Srimad Bhakti Vedanta, Shamini, Tiramini. Namaste, Sarasvati Devi, Gauravani, Vitarani, Namaste, Shunyavari, Pashat, Shri, Stani, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. All right, so the first thing is that we have here one bottle of mosquito repellent because it's a little gloomy this morning and mosquitoes are out. If you need, just reach over here and pass it around. Second thing is that His Holiness Bhaktivedya Purna Maharaj has gone to Calcutta this morning, so I'll be conducting the class, but he will be back today, so he should be joining us tomorrow morning. On Thursday, after the Wednesday break, we are expecting a performance by our Sri Rupanuga Vidyapit Bhagavat players who are going to do a nice little drama of the departure of Dhritarashtra from Hastinapur, Dhritarashtra with his wife Gandhari, accompanied by Vidura, for the purpose of achieving liberation in this lifetime despite having committed so many offenses. And we hope on Friday that we will have a presentation organized by His Grace Shantiparayan Prabhu from some of our adult students on chapters. That's chapter 13, yes? So 14 and 15. We are now on chapter 15, which we'll be covering today and hopefully finishing tomorrow. If someone could help me, I'm not sure where we left off. Page 6? So we'll go right into that. We at end of page 7. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yes, I recall we were discussing how Maharaj Yudhisthira actually, this comes back to the point of how Bhagavatam presents simultaneously in its description of creation is also telling us individually about the formation, development, nature of our human physical organism, physical and mental organism. Because the great universe is the macrocosm and our local human body is the microcosm. So this was the theme we were giving in the afternoon not long ago, a course on the Bhagavad science of mind, and we were stressing this very much, how it's not that there is no science of psychology, for example, in the Bhagavatam. Actually, the Bhagavatam is replete with such a science, but one has to understand that it is inseparable from the science of creation. And one has to learn how to apply the macrocosmic information to our own individual person. So we actually see this in this purport of verse 42, how Srila Prabhupada is explaining about the Mahatattva Avyakta, a term which we would take in a cosmic sense, the great Mahatattva. But in disassociating himself from this material world and breaking all his attachments to not only external sense objects, but even his own identity, his own material identity. It is explained by Srila Prabhupada in this purport that Maharaj Yudhisthira actually reversed the process of creation in his own psychophysical organism. And this is actually by the method of yoga. So that's a very significant point of our philosophy that we need to understand, especially the first canto is, of course, giving us a general introduction to the totality of topics. When we get into the second canto, which may be at the tail end of this year's semester, likely, whatever, I can guarantee you that whatever you might have found difficult about the first canto, and when we get to the second canto, that difficulty will be multiplied by about 10 times. Because second canto and third canto are probably, along with some portions of the seventh canto and the 11th canto, the most philosophically challenging cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we get into this, you know, we enter the Bhagavatam through the first canto, a general introduction, and then immediately we get into the really difficult tattva. So you have to be prepared for that. So anyway, we are continuing after this purport, 42 to verse 42. We continue at the bottom of page 7. With the summary, this is the Shlok Anusharanam, ending with the last verse, verse 51. So like their elder brother, the other Pandavas also took note of the symptoms of Kali. In every way, they followed Yudhisthira's example. As the Pandavas trod the path of renunciation, they meditated upon the lotus feet of Lord Krishna as the supreme goal of life. In this way, wrapped in deep personal trance, personal meaning their trance, because we see that Maharaj Yudhisthira was employing the basics, the basic method of Astanga Yoga, but not impersonally so. And a while ago we actually read from Jiva Goswami a comparison of Bhakti Yoga to the Astanga Yoga system. So there is a definite parallel between the two yoga systems. In other words, they accomplish the same things, but Bhakti Yoga is personal. So even though we may read of the Pandavas employing the Astanga Yoga system, which for us today is practically impossible. It's practically impossible for us to successfully utilize Astanga Yoga. They, being denizens of the previous age, Dwapara Yuga, were able to be successful in their use of it, but they used it in a personal manner to focus their minds upon Lord Sri Krishna. So that's the meaning of this term, personal trance. So each and every one of the Pandavas in his self-same body entered Lord Krishna's supreme abode, Goloka Vrindavan. That is a summary of texts 45 through 48. Suta Goswami then reveals that while traveling on pilgrimage, Vidura left his body at Prabhasa so that he could be reinstated in his original post as the Lord of Pitriloka. That means as who? Yamaraj. Yes, Vidura, that was already explained. Vidura was actually an incarnation of Lord Yamaraj in the Leela of Lord Krishna as the result of a curse of one Muni who considered himself to be unjustly punished in the Yamalaya, in the abode of Yamaraj. So Vidura therefore was reinstated in his original post as the Lord of Pitriloka. That might seem mysterious to you, because Pitriloka we think of as a heavenly region where the forefathers go, and that is true, but a careful reading of the Srimad Bhagavatam reveals that there is a sort of mystical triangular relationship between Yamaloka, Chandraloka, and Pitriloka. They are in a, best I can tell you, in a upper dimensional sense, they are the same place. But in our present perception, we understand them to be three different places. There's the Yamaloka at the bottom of the universe, there's the Pitriloka, which is also in the lower region of the universe, but which is a heavenly place. And then there's a Chandraloka, which is higher heavenly planet. Yet somehow simultaneously, they are the same destination. I can tell you that there is an aspect of the Yamaloka which is heavenly. His own Shabha, his own meeting house where he himself dwells with his associates, is a heavenly region. And the Pitris, the qualified forefathers, they are also there and they're enjoying. But when their descendants on earth fail after some generations, if that family line fails to continue to keep up the Shraddha ceremony, then these Pitris run out of pious credits and then they become subject to their sinful reactions. Because someone in Pitriloka has both pious reactions that he's enjoying at that time in Pitriloka, but he has potential papa karma, sinful reactions, which are waiting for him in the future. And that is seen in the Krishna book, in the narrative of King Nriga, you might remember, who is described as having so many pious reactions due him that Yamaraj commented, "Then I cannot see the end. I cannot actually see the end of your heavenly enjoyment. But you do have one problem, that you got in trouble with a couple Brahmins over a cow. You gave a cow to one Brahmin and somehow that cow wandered into the herd of some other cows that you gave to a different Brahmin, and they began to argue with one another as to whose cow this one really belonged to, and the result was is that you were cursed. The Brahmins blamed you. And as a result of that curse, you've got a rather severe papa reaction, papa vipaka, it's called, waiting for you." And so Maharaj Nriga, he chose that first because he was being a good karmi. He wanted to get rid of all the bad things first and then enjoy without any, you know, dark clouds on the horizon. And he thought that, well, after this is done, then something bad is waiting for me. So, all right, let me take the sinful reaction first. And so he had to take birth as a brightly colored lizard in a well. And he was actually delivered from that situation personally by Lord Krishna. So that shows you how a person can have so much punya karma, pious credit, and yet still the papa karma is there. And that we see in the religions also, the religions like in Christianity and also in Islam. In Christianity they have this, at least in, I don't know about in the Protestant sects, but in Catholicism there's this idea of purgatory, that you may be a very good person, but you inevitably are sinful. That's part of the Christian theology, that anyone born in this world is sinful. It's, you know, because they're descended from Adam, and Adam was the first sinful person. Anyway, some sense of inherited sin. So you may have been very pious in this lifetime, a very good Christian, but still you have to go to purgatory, which is some place which is like hell, but there's an end to it. And whatever impurities are there are cleansed by suffering in purgatory. And then you can go to heaven forever. And then in Islam, there's a teaching that every Muslim must go to hell for some time, because every Muslim has committed sins. So every Muslim has to go to hell. I heard this from a Muslim, so I think it's accurate. A Muslim told me this himself, who is quite knowledgeable of the Muslim theology. So it's not something I've made up or read in some book, but I heard directly from a practicing Muslim. That every Muslim must go to hell, but if they're believers, if they're, you know, their faith is true, then Allah will mercifully relieve them from that hellish condition, and then they will get their reward. So there's this idea in these are karmic religions, that no one is actually really pure. Everyone has is carrying in their hearts both papa and punya, piety and sin. And that's certainly in the Vedic religion admitted regarding the those who follow the karma marga, the path of karma. They have both sinful and pious reactions to them. So even if they go to heaven, there are still lingering impious reactions. They will have to come back down to earth, Srila Prabhupada said, in the rain. And according to what karma is left them after they've exhausted those heavenly reactions, then they will take birth on earth in some appropriate form. It might be an animal form, it might be a human form, but they will get a human body. They will get an earthly body and then have to undergo reactions and eventually get the chance again to perform pious activities, and perhaps again to go to heaven, or they may misuse their independence and go even further down into hell. So, we continue. So anyway, Yamaraj, Vidura, is Yamaraj, and Yamaraj is the judge of all this. He's the one who judges. By his judgment, one gets either his sinful reactions in hell, Naraka Loka, or his pious reactions in the Pitri Loka. So continuing, seeing her five husbands depart home, Draupadi absorbed her mind fully in Lord Krishna, as did Arjuna's wife, Subhadra. And thus these glorious ladies attained the same result as their exalted husbands. That's the summary of verses 49 and 50. And as was indicated in the Adhyaya Prakashika, the chapter at a glance, there is a benediction at the end of this chapter, and this is the benediction expressed in verse 51. Suta Goswami concludes this chapter by pronouncing this benediction. The subject of the departure of the sons of Pandu for the ultimate goal of life, back to Godhead, is fully auspicious and is perfectly true. Therefore, anyone who hears this narration with devotional faith certainly gains the devotional service of the Lord, the highest perfection of life. So that's a very wonderful benediction. So we move on to the next section, 15.4. This is vritti, or commentary. And this is on the answer to question 20. Question 20 was asked in the previous chapter. This is chapter 15, so that at the end of chapter 14, Maharaj Yudhisthira asked Arjuna, who had just arrived from Dwarka, what transpired at Dwarka. And his question, it was in three parts, but the important part was the last part, in which he was coming to the conclusion that you seem so dejected, so despondent, that I can only conclude that Lord Krishna must have left this world. Is this true? So, this is the commentary now on Arjuna's answer to that question asked in the previous chapter. He gave his answer in this chapter, 15. So this is a commentary on his answer, which is in seven parts as derived from the Bhaktivedanta purports that are indicated after each of the seven parts. So in the first part, Arjuna, we should understand that Arjuna is a dear friend of Sri Krishna. Krishna wonderfully reciprocates with Arjuna in power and glory, which is caused by Arjuna's dependence on Krishna. So this is the summary of the verses and the purports of from 1 to 6. Then the second part, Arjuna gives examples of the loving reciprocations between Arjuna and Krishna in fraternal rasa. So that extended from the purports, the verses and purports from 7 to 17. Part 3, such dealings of pure devotees with Krishna are fully satisfying. According to his plan, the Lord arranges for the give and take of such dealings with his associates in the course of his pastimes. This is a summary of 18 through 21 verses and purports, and 20 through 26. 4. Maya is the condition of illusory separation from Krishna. It is completely different from the loving, ecstatic separation that Arjuna felt in chapter 15 that he was expressing in this chapter. One becomes free of Maya through association of devotees, and by remembering the Lord's instructions, by chanting, by reading the scriptures, etc. Because Lord Krishna is eternally present, one can even become liberated from illusion simply by understanding Krishna's birth and activities. That is also told where in Bhagavad Gita, famously? Janma Karma Chame Divyam, in the fourth chapter. Just by knowing the truth, the tattva of Krishna's birth and activities, one becomes a liberated soul. So this is summarized from verses and purports 27 through 31. Part 5, Krishna is always here and does not expire when he quote unquote leaves this world. Summary of 32 through 35 verses and purports. 6, at least at the end of one's life, one should detach himself from all material dependencies and designations and leave home to fix his mind in incessantly thinking of Krishna. Summary of 36 through 34 verses and purports 7, but one must begin training and live purely in one's life to attain success at the time of death by fixing one's mind in Krishna and going back to Godhead. If one can master this art and attain the same result of going back to Godhead. This is some typographical error here. If one can master this art, one can attain the same result of going back to Godhead while still within this body, which is what Arjuna and the Pandavas did. While within the same body, they transferred back home, back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada says to Goloka Vrindavan. That's the summary of verses and purports 45 through 51. So we move on to the Parashishtam or appendix. And come to the section of the appendix called the Vinodakam, which are the points of interest that are specially intended for full-time enrolled students who are readying themselves for the Bhakti Vaibhava examination on the first six cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. So if that's why you're here, this is especially meant for you. This is called Vinodakam in Sanskrit. That means points of special interest. So, subsection 15.5.1.1. At exam time, students are responsible for knowing the Pratigya. What is the Pratigya? That is the solemn statement of purpose that is given in part 1. Of this outline of chapter 15. And the other day we handed you a kind of bringing you up to date sheet so that you would know the pratigya, the solemn statement of purpose of verses 1 through 12 and chapters 1 through 12 and the Pratigya of 13 and 14 are revealed in the essay questions, which you have to hand in, by the way, today for the end of the class. At 9 o'clock, we'll remind you of that. So in the questions and answers, the purposes of chapters 13 and 14 are given, so you have them there. And then starting with this outline of chapter 15, they're given in the beginning. So the Pratigya is derived from Srila Prabhupada's title for any given chapter in the Bhagavatam. In this case, the title of chapter 15 is The Pandavas Retire Timely. So verses 32 through 37, in which Sutta Goswami explains why the Pandavas, in view of the time factor, prepared to leave this world, offer us a purport to that title. In other words, the Pratigya is taken from these verses, 32 through 37. So Sutta's explanation can be broken down into these three components. A. So the first point of the Pratigya is that the Pandavas had no separate mission on the earth apart from that of the Lord. In other words, the Pandavas didn't come here for a vacation from the spiritual world, you know, and just booked their ticket on Air Vaikuntha to coincide with Lord Krishna's appearance, you know. Hey, why don't we go to the material world? Oh, when's Krishna going? Oh, he's going at this time. Oh, yeah, that's great. We can also be there for that too, as well as do some vacationing at Club Med, you see. It wasn't like that. They have no separate purpose for coming to the material world. They came here only because Krishna was coming to have his lila, and his lila included them. They have their mission within the Lord's lila. So when the Pandavas learned of the departure from the material world of Lord Krishna and of his Yadu dynasty, they decided to go back home, back to Godhead, because there was no other reason for them to be here. And component B of the Pratigya is that Lord Krishna's mission was to pick out the thorn. This is actually, we're directly quoting from verses 34 through 35. So
Srila Prabhupada uses this English analogy that Lord Krishna's mission was to pick out the thorn of demoniac kingly dynasties lording over the earth with the thorn of his own eternal associates, the Yadavas and the Pandavas. Had he permitted the Yadavas to flourish on the earth after that mission was completed, their descendants might have become yet another burden upon the earth. Thus, like a magician, the Lord disappeared from this world, taking with him his entire dynasty. So Lord Krishna, in other words, he didn't want his pristine reputation to be sullied by, say, several generations of Yadavas down the lines who might become puffed up due to the influence of their association with the material energy, thinking of themselves as being descended from Krishna's own family, and we are the greatest, we are the best, and everyone should surrender to us. And in this way, they themselves might become a similar burden on the earth as these kings that Krishna appeared to remove from the earth. Because actually, these kings, great kings like Jarasandha and Kamsa and Shishupal and so on and so forth, they themselves are descended from great Kshatriya dynasties. It's not that if you trace back their family lines, you come to some, you know, some family line ascending from the Bila Svarga, the lower planets. They were originally, these family lines were originally also very pious Kshatriya dynasties, but due to the time factor, the coming, you know, the dwindling of the Dwapara Yuga and the coming of the Kali Yuga, so there was degradation in these family lines. And so demons started to take their birth in what were once saintly Kshatriya families. So Krishna didn't want, so that if that can happen to those family lines, they could happen to the Yadu line also. So Krishna didn't want that to happen because that's his own, he appears with the Yadu dynasty. In fact, we saw a quotation from the Sandarbhas. Jiva Goswami is saying that Lord Krishna's identity as the personality of Godhead. Jiva Goswami was specifically stating that Lord Krishna's identity as the personality of Godhead is made known to us because he is surrounded by the Satvatas, who are indeed the members of the Yadu dynasty in Vaikuntha. Because the Yadu dynasty are the Lord's eternal Vaikuntha associates. And they appear here as the Yadavas. But the same personalities exist with him eternally in Vaikuntha Dham. So that is how Krishna is known as the personality of Godhead. Jiva Goswami very clearly stated that that was how Brahma was able to understand that this Krishna is the same Mahanarayan who is my eternal Lord, because this Krishna is surrounded by these same personalities who are the residents of Vaikuntha, where Lord Mahanarayan is the Lord. So Krishna is the intimate feature of my Lord. So thus, like a magician, the Lord disappeared from this world, taking with him his entire dynasty. Summary of 34 and 35 verses and purports. Then the third component of the pratigya is that the instant Krishna departed, the personality of Kali, this is bringing us back to the point of the time factor, that the instant Krishna departed, the personality of Kali, who was already present on the earth, because actually there is, I'm just trying to think of the name of this king. It slips in my mind. But there is, in the Puranas, there's a story of one king who slips my mind. And actually Prabhupada said, Nahush. Maybe it's Nahush. I'm not sure of that. It's actually not important that we remember his name, because there's a purport by Prabhupada that says that this king was a great Karma Kandiya king, but he had nothing to do with Krishna, so therefore he's not that important. That's probably why I can't remember his name. But anyway, in the Puranic literatures, he's, you know, the Puranas also give, you know, time to the accomplishment of the great followers of Karma Marga. Because the Puranas begin with teaching us the difference between sinful and pious activities. The Puranas and the lower modes. Bhagavatam doesn't bother with that, but other Puranas do. So there's this king, whose name I can't remember. But he was harassed. He's an example. He's sort of like the figure in the... If you know anything about the Bible, the Old Testament, there's this personality, Job, who is famous for having suffered so much. He was the devil, Satan. Not the devil, but he was Satan. Actually, at this time, Satan is an angel of God who wants to test the devotion of the Lord's devotees. So this Satan, he suggests to God that this Job, who seems to be so much your devotee, if you took away all the material support you're giving him, the nice, you know, material facilities, and put him into a real suffering condition, I don't think he would remain your devotee. So then the Lord did that. And he was, you know, he had to suffer boils, and this is all in the Old Testament. So many things happened. His family died or rejected him or something like that. He had to undergo very much suffering, but he remained faithful to the Lord. So this is a sort of similar story involving this Karma Kandiya king. He had to undergo so much suffering. And this was in the Dwapara Yuga. But it's explained that the Dwapara Purush and also the Kali Purush, the personality of Kali, was already on the earth during the Dwapara Yuga, and they teamed up together to give trouble to this king. They were like a team, you know. Let's do this to him, and let's try that out. And yeah,
was it Nala?
Nala, yes, exactly, Nala. It's in the Mahabharata, isn't it? Yeah. So Maharaj Nala, yeah. So the personality of Kali was even around in the Dwapara Yuga. But it's only as the Dwapara Yuga ends that he starts to become more and more powerful. As the time of Dwapara reaches its end, and Kali's influence becomes more and more apparent. And then the instant that Krishna departed, the personality of Kali, who was already present, was able to fully manifest his influence throughout the world. Just like that. Just in an instant. Just when Krishna, when his lotus feet lifted off the surface of the earth, as he was, it's described in the 12th canto, I believe, 11th or 12th canto. Anyway, when Krishna is departing at the end of the Srimad Bhagavatam, all the demigods see him rising through all the levels of the universe. So when his lotus feet were no longer touching the earth, at that instant, the personality of Kali manifest all of his demoniac potencies. Noting the signs of the change of yugas, Maharaj Yudhisthira understood that it was time for he and his family to follow the Lord back to the spiritual world, because the Pandavas have nothing to do with the Kali Yuga. They're not supposed to be here during Kali Yuga. Their time is the Dwapara Yuga, when the Lord is present. So when they saw the Kali Yuga is now fully manifest, that was the signal that it was time for them to go. So that's the summary of texts 36 and 37 and the purports. So now there's the next section of the Vinodikam, which is very important. Very important for the students who are working for Bhakti Vaibhava degree. So, The students should know the essential question that Arjuna addresses in this chapter. A question that was asked by Yudhisthira in the previous chapter. And they should know the essence of the essence of Arjuna's reply. So in explaining this, I've written that the essence of King Yudhisthira's question, the essence being the only part of the question that Arjuna bothers to answer, was presented in the study guide for chapter 14 as the third part of a series of inquiries the king put before his brother. So you can look back in the study guide to chapter 14, part number 3 of this question 20, part 3. That's actually the essence. And what is that? Can someone tell me? What is that question? Oh, you have it there in front of you? All right, you can read it. I'd like to know if somebody knows it. It's very simple. The essence of Yudhisthira's question. He asks all kinds of questions there. But what's the essential question? Yes.
Is Krishna... Yes.
Has Lord Krishna departed from this world? There's so many questions he asks about the different members of the Yadu dynasty. He mentions them. And then when he sees Arjuna's not getting any more enlivened, then he begins to worry about Arjuna. So then he asks a second series of questions about Arjuna's personal welfare. What about you, Arjuna? Have you done something wrong in terms of Kshatriya Dharma? Is that why you look so unhappy? But Arjuna doesn't, in his answer, he doesn't touch any of those inquiries at all. The first thing that comes out of his mouth is that Lord Krishna is no longer with us. My dear friend, Lord Krishna, on whom I was totally dependent, from whom I got all my power, is no longer with us. So that's the essential question, the third question, which is expressed in the last verse of chapter 14. Now you can read it.
Or is it that you are feeling empty for all time because you might have lost your most intimate friend, Lord Krishna? Oh, my brother Arjuna, I can think of no other reason for your becoming so dejected.
Yeah, that's exactly Srila Prabhupada's translation. So that's the essential question. And now we have to, students should also know the essence of the essence of Arjuna's reply. So, of course you have it there because I put it in this outline, didn't I? I didn't look ahead myself, it's there. Yes. So, Arjuna's reply and Sutta Goswami's comment on it is covered by this study guide for chapter 15. We've already gone through it in section 4, parts 1 through 7. But this section spans the entire 51 verses of the chapter. So that's quite a long answer. So if we subtract Sutta's commentary, verses 28 through 51, and his introductory depiction of Arjuna's dejection, verses 1 through 4, no less than 23 verses remain that Arjuna spoke personally to his brother, the emperor of the world. So what, are you responsible for 23 verses then? In the Bhakti Vaibhava examination? No, you are not. What then is the essence of the essence of Arjuna's answer that the student needs to know for the Bhakti Vaibhava examination? The most essential part of Arjuna's response to the above question of Maharaj Yudhisthira is expressed in his concluding statement, verse 27 of chapter 15, which is, "Now I am attracted to those instructions imparted to me by the personality of Godhead Govinda, because they are impregnated with instructions for relieving the burning heart in all circumstances of time and space." That again is verse 27. That's the essence of the essence. Arjuna responds to Yudhisthira over 23 verses. His answer encompasses 23 verses, so that's a lot of information. But the essence is verse 27, which we've just heard. Now, how do we know? How can I say that this is actually the essence? So listen, that this is really the essence of Arjuna's answer, which again amounted to a total of 23 verses, is evident from Srila Prabhupada's purport to the above quoted text. Text 27 again. Keep in mind Yudhisthira's question. Are you feeling empty for all time because you might have lost your most intimate friend, Lord Krishna, as you read these words by His divine grace from the purport to 1:15:27. This is Srila Prabhupada's own words. The problem which arose in the heart of Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra was solved by the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. Again, after the departure of the Lord from the vision of earthly people, when Arjuna was face to face with being vanquished in his acquired power and prominence, he wanted again to remember the great teachings of Bhagavad Gita, just to teach all concerned that Bhagavad Gita can be consulted in all critical times, not only for solace from all kinds of mental agonies, but also for the way out of great entanglements which may embarrass one in some critical hour. The merciful Lord left behind him the great teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, so that one can take the instructions of the Lord even when he is not visible to material eyesight. Material senses cannot have any estimation of the Supreme Lord. But by his inconceivable power, the Lord can incarnate himself to the sense perception of the conditioned souls in a suitable manner through the agency of matter, which is also another form of the Lord's manifest energy. In other words, as a book like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam is certainly printed on paper, which is a material substance, and inscribed with ink, which is a material substance. However, the message of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavad Purana, these Bhagavad Shastras, is not material. The message is Krishna himself. These are considered incarnations of the Lord. Direct, full, Purna Bhagavan himself. Not partial incarnations, not Svangsa, not Vaibhava, but they are Purna Bhagavan incarnations. Thus, the Bhagavad Gita or any authentic scriptural sound representation of the Lord is also the incarnation of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada continues. There is no difference between the sound representation of the Lord and the Lord himself. One can derive the same benefit from the Bhagavad Gita as Arjuna did in the personal presence of the Lord. So I'm putting a lot of stress on this, because what we're learning here in this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, what we're receiving here, is a glorification of the other great Bhagavad Shastra, the Bhagavad Gita. And this is extremely significant, because the Srimad Bhagavatam is glorified in exactly the same way. Because what was one of the questions of the sages? Who remembers? One of the six questions of the sages, the last question, actually. Yes, where have the principles of religion taken shelter now that Lord Krishna has departed? And what is the answer? Purnarko Dignodati. It is this Bhagavat Purana. So what, in effect, Srila Prabhupada is writing in this purport is that the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita accomplish exactly the same purpose. They have exactly the same purpose. They are both equally incarnations of the Lord. And Arjuna, in his transcendental lamentation, this was actually We can say that, this is very interesting, we can say that, because Prabhupada says Arjuna was in the same plight in a sense. He was at a loss. He was at a total loss. At Kurukshetra, when he asked Krishna to drive his chariot between the two armies, and he looked out and he saw near and dear ones on the opposite side. He saw Grandfather Bhishma. He saw his martial arts guru Drona. He saw so many others whom he had grown up with, shared childhood with. He was looking upon them fondly and thinking, now I have to fight them. Now either they will be killed or I will be killed. What have we come to? What is... So we know that Krishna purposefully placed Arjuna in material lamentation. Prabhupada said that the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita in this instance is to teach us all that to surrender to Krishna, we have to be prepared to sever our connections to the concept of, quote unquote, Prabhupada used this phrase, our own men. You see, we have people whom we identify with. They might be family members, they might even be God brothers, God sisters. For whatever reason, we consider them very, very close to us. But the day may come when Krishna may demand of us, break your connection with them. If you want to be securely sheltered at my lotus feet, you have to break your connection with these people. And you may be saying, but, I went to Gurukul with that person. We used to eat khichdi together. And on Saturday afternoon feast, we had pasta. I remember him. He was such a nice brahmachari. And now, Krishna, you're asking me to have nothing more to do. So it may come to that. We hope not, of course, but it may come to that. That is the lesson Prabhupada said of Bhagavad Gita, that this conception of my own men, whether it be my family, even spiritual family, or because that was the relationship between Krishna and Drona. Imagine that. Drona was Krishna's guru. If you read Mahabharata, you see Drona was Arjuna's guru. Sandipati Muni was Krishna's guru. Arjuna was giving every much respect to Dronacharya as is expected that a disciple gives a guru. We don't find in Mahabharata that there's very much time given to say that Dronacharya was Krishna's was Arjuna's martial arts guru in Danur Veda, and that somehow made him, you know, different than a guru who teaches transcendental. We don't find Mahabharata giving much time for that. Drona was Arjuna's guru. That is the point that is made. But Krishna, in demanding Arjuna's full surrender, put Dronacharya on the other side. And Kripacharya, who was also another great Brahmana Acharya, on the other side. And Grandfather Bhishma, who is a great devotee of the Lord. Grandfather Bhishma is one of the Mahajans. Krishna put him on the other side. So you see, this separation, don't kid yourself that Krishna doesn't reach right up into spiritual association. And, you know, with an uncompromising blade, razor sharp blade, cut right through the middle of it. If you want to be my devotee, you have to separate yourself. But they're devotees too, they may be. But you have to surrender to me and not be associated with them anymore, any longer. And Krishna deliberately arranged this to place Arjuna in, well, Prabhupada frankly says, in illusion. I mean, this is what it took to put Arjuna into Maya. See? Arjuna was such a great personality that it took it. This was the limit that Krishna had to go to. You see, it's so extreme. But actually, then Arjuna did, in a sense, he did fall into Maya. He lost his bearings. He didn't know what to do at all. This is how we understand what Maya is. You know, if you are, for example, a temple president, say you have that designation, temple president, and you have your duties, and you wake up one morning, it's 3:30 in the morning, and you know that you have to go down now be in the temple and lead the temple program and give the class and do all the duties that are expected of a temple president through the day. But there you are, 3:30 in the morning, sitting in your sleeping bag. What am I going to do? I can't do this. I can't do it anymore. No! And they see you running off into the night. You know, what is everyone going to say? Our temple president fell into Maya this morning. He ran off. So something like that happened to Arjuna. And then this Prabhupada alludes to the second time when Krishna departed. And this we can say is purely there's not really a question of Maya, because this is separation from the Lord. This is transcendental Maya. This is the Maya that is experienced, the yoga Maya that is experienced by great devotees in the spiritual world. Radharani's lamentation when Krishna goes missing, so to speak, when whispers are coming to her, Krishna's gone off with Chandravali and left you. Then it breaks her heart into a million pieces. And she also doesn't know what to do at that point. She's also goes mad with lamentation, but this is considered transcendental. So this was Arjuna's situation the second time around. If anything, it was even worse. But in both cases, we see that it was the Bhagavad Gita that again restored him. As we see at the end of chapter 11, Krishna says, "Now I'm restored to my." Arjuna says, "Now I'm restored to my original nature." After seeing that universal form, Krishna showed his four-handed form and then his two-handed Tavasoma Janardana, the beautiful Janardana form. So on seeing Krishna's own form, Arjuna said, "Now I am restored to my original nature. I am composed again in heart." So this proves that Bhagavad Gita is non-different from the form of Krishna. Because when Arjuna understood and accepted and surrendered to the message of Bhagavad Gita, he was similarly fully composed in heart. And he said, "Achyuta," this is as Mahabharata resumes after Bhagavad Gita, "Achyuta, drive my chariot," in full determination. Achyuta means, "O infallible one, now you drive my chariot, I am going off to battle." And so similarly we find in chapter 15 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Arjuna finds the same composure, his same original nature as being the inseparable associate from Krishna by remembering the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. So this is, I'm in this study guide, I'm laying special stress on this because this is Srimad Bhagavatam's own glorification of Bhagavad Gita, so that we can clearly see that there are two great Bhagavad Shastras of the same importance. The same importance ultimately, because both of them are equally incarnations of Krishna himself. One is called Srimad Bhagavatam, the other is called Bhagavad Gita. And that is the version of the Srimad Bhagavatam itself. So that's why I say this is the essence of Arjuna's answer. And this is what you need to know, those who are going to take the Bhakti Vaibhava test. This is what you need to know. Out of all those 23 verses, this is the one that you need to know. Most important. So it's now just past 9:30. We will continue tomorrow. Yes, we will be able to finish up chapter 15 tomorrow. Then we will have the Wednesday break, and then Thursday you're all heartily invited for a beautiful play put on by our Sri Rupanuga Vidyapit Bhagavat players, headed by Bhakta David. Ki jai. And then the next day we will be wonderfully surprised by Shanti Parayan Prabhu and his crew that he organizes. And remember, we need also for the next two chapters a similar presentation. So don't take everyone in the class. Leave some who can do chapters 16 and 17, because those two go together. Or they can do it again if they want to. Doesn't matter. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.